Welcome to the Collections by Michelle Brown Show, a show about people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality as they create change. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Center for Peace Counseling and Holistic Healing Services.
Welcome to Collections by Michelle Brown. I'm your host, Michelle Brown. Each week, we'll be talking with people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality, and creating change. Well, we've made it through the first round of Democratic presidential debates, and joining us once again is my old friend and colleague, Betty Covertier. Originally from Brooklyn, New York, Betty called the Atlanta area home for many years. Now in retirement, she spends a good deal of her time in Florida, RVing with her dogs. She joins us to share her experiences and observations on the politics, the candidates, and what's on the minds of Florida voters, all from her unique perspective. An out lesbian of Puerto Rican descent, Betty was the founder, producer, and host of Alternative Perspectives, an LGBTQ radio show that continues to air on WRFG Radio Free Georgia, a community-owned and operated station. She served in various capacities on a number of nonprofit organizations over the years in Atlanta area before retiring, and is the recipient of many awards for her service to the community. Betty, welcome back to Collections by Michelle Brown. I'm so happy to be talking with you again. How are you doing?
So I just stay local so I can go and see my the doctors that I have found down here. And there are many, many doctors willing to do, you know, and get paid by Medicare. So,
Wow.
So I'm just, you know, trying to just enjoy, and I'm getting very, very familiar with Central Florida, you know. I might write a book on it at some point, like everybody else does when they get to know something so well.
Well, I'm glad that you're okay. I was in Atlanta for a minute. Boy, and it's been hot there.
Yeah, it was hot. Yeah, I've heard. I talked to folks, you know, from back home and whatnot, and, you know, it's been unbearable up there also. But this summer has been very, very, very hot. It's getting cooler now. I mean, today is still in the 90s.
Well, you know, I figured it's time for us to talk because, you know, there's so much that's going on. And, you know, I always want to hear, first of all, how you are, and then go from there. So,
Well, thank you for the invite. Thank you so much for calling, you know, for sending me the email and inviting me, because you must have known it was time for me to rant a little bit, you know? I know. I don't even know where to start, you know? It's just, everything is just, you know, I mean, everything is just so chaotic in plain English. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter who you talk to. Nobody really, you know, it's like everybody is in this space of, we really don't know what's happening, you know, because the way I look at it, if you weren't informed from the beginning, in other words, if you don't know the history of the politics of this country from each administration on to each, there's like, it just leaves you in a place of, okay, so what the hell is going on? You know, they don't have no explanations that are how to, sort of kind of make sense of what is going on and what they hear on the TV. And then, you know, we have the different channels, and down here, you know, the Fox News is a big thing down here. And everybody's misinformed.
Well, you know, one of the things that we know that has been under attack, and that, you know, you hear people talking about, that's a big topic, is health care. And you have, you know, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren talking about Medicare for all. Everyone is talking about it. And as a a senior citizen, and part of why you're there in Florida, one of the things that's keeping you there, is
my health.
With health care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As you're down there and you're seeing, and, you know, we also know that particularly senior citizens in general, but particularly elders in the LGBTQ community, you know, that's a big thing with us. What are you seeing, and what is the conversation there? I mean, are people talking about health care? And I know we've talked over a period of time, like at one point how they were, when you got there, they were talking about, oh, that Obamacare. And then it's like, no, they're softening that. But now that they've had some time to see
what's happening with
health care, what's the conversation?
Well, the conversation among seniors is not that really, they're not really that concerned, because if they have Medicare and a supplement, basically everything is taken care of, because that's how I'm functioning down here. I have Medicare and I have a supplement from my old job in New York. Okay.
So
that 20% is taken care of. So I guess when I go see a doctor, I say to the doctor, if it's not taken care of by Medicare, don't talk to me about it. Okay. And that takes care, because what you have down here is a lot of experimental stuff with the older folks, with all my aches and pain. This is what I've encountered, all these elderly folks that also have pains, you know, and they have these things that haven't been addressed, and they want to look for the short-term thing. And, you know, stem cell stuff is very, very popular down here, okay? And some can afford it and some cannot, because Medicare does not do stem cell. But there's all kinds of different alternatives that Medicare takes care of, as far as injections and gels and stuff for the knee and stuff for your hip and all this other kind of stuff, you know. And so a lot of folks do that. But one thing about that I've noticed is that people from Canada come to Florida for their treatment.
Really?
Yes. They pay for them. They pay for them down here because they have money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Canada, they say to me, we have to wait 6 months, a year before we can see the doctor. Okay, so that's universal health care, you know, and that's an issue. And that's what I've heard a lot. Even people from Europe that I've talked to, they have to wait, you know, so they go other places, you know, where they can get appointments faster, or if they have the money, they will pay. Okay, those like myself who do not have the money to pay, we just say, okay, whatever Medicare takes care of and my supplement, that's what I want you to do for me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I go to three different pain doctors, you know, but they all get taken care of by Medicare. And Medicare for all, the one thing people don't understand, because you're not on Medicare, is that Medicare is not free now. It's not free. You know, you pay for that from your Social Security check. You pay for it when you were working, okay? So you can have the benefit when you turn 65. And then they take out the premium from your Social Security check when you turn 65, because you can get a Social Security at 62, which is what I did. So from 62 to 65, your Social Security check is larger. And then when that 65 kicks in, that very next month, you're minus the hundred and whatever dollars they're charging that year.
Wow.
Right. Automatic. Okay. And then whatever, when you turn 65 and Medicare kicks in, the health care that you had, which is what I had in New York City, disappears. It just vanishes. No warning. It's just gone. Right. And that becomes your supplement, because that's what was contracted through the unions when you work for New York City. But that's not, you know, everywhere. That New York City, because when you work for New York City, you had a good health care plan, you know, and the benefits that come along with it are very good. Okay, so, but that's unionized. Okay, so that's where unions come in. I swear by unions. I mean, anybody tell me that people down here are not very familiar with unions, because apparently Florida has not been a union state. Okay, so they just go for their supplements like Humana and that United Health thing is big down here. And now you have Advent Healthcare, which is a hospital chain, and they have another one. I mean, you have hospitals, emergency, urgent care places, and doctors just popping up everywhere. down here. Everywhere.
No.
I mean, they, since I've been down here, they must have doubled. When I first come from the time I've been here, just the short time that I've been here, they've doubled everywhere. I mean, but healthcare is a tricky subject. I mean, you have to actually really get the information and understand what it is that you need and what it is it's going to cost you, because nothing is free. And when they talk about it, it sounds like it's going to be free. You know, when I heard Bernie, you know, talk about it last in the last debates about, deductions will disappear, you know, co-pays will disappear. Well, I'm not sure how that will happen, because that's going to be a tremendous cost, and it's still going to fall back on the taxpayer. You know, so the taxpayer is going to have to foot the bill. You know, how they formulated and how they come out with a cost is beyond me. I mean, I just can't see it happening. Okay, the best remedy is Obamacare and fixing it, because the error there was that when they had those 33 states that didn't have the Medicaid expansion, that's what made it go bad for so many folks. Because I mean, Obamacare was made, or the Affordable Care Act, which is one of the same thing, was made, you know, put into place to work alongside Medicaid for those people who could not afford insurance. And people don't seem to understand that. A lot of folks still don't understand that. They, you know, they just, because somebody told them it failed, you know, Republicans, they believe it. You know, they don't look into it, they don't read up on it, and they don't go back to see how it was intended to work for the people, you know, because the federal government was going to foot the bill. You know, taxpayers' money, of course, was going to foot the bill, but it was the federal government that was going to foot the Medicaid for the Medicaid expansion, so it wasn't going to cost any more, you know. But by those states not doing Medicaid expansion, it left. That's where you get all those millions of people that don't have insurance because they can't afford it. Okay, because you have to make up to $12,000 or more to be able to get into Obamacare. If you make less, you don't qualify. But if you don't have Medicaid expansion in your state, you're left to you know, whatever they do for poor people. Because I helped my neighbor years ago when I was up there, because he was living with his sister. He had no job. He had no income. He didn't qualify. We had to go up online, because the first thing you had to do was go up into the Affordable Care Act thing and apply. And once you get turned down, then you go to Social Security, and they put you through the process of declaring you, not being able to afford anything. So then they start giving you, if you're disabled and for whatever reasons that you can't work and stuff like that, then they give you the SSI, and then they give you Medicaid, and depending on if you qualify, they'll either give you the Medicare early, because some people can be on both, you know, depending on their condition. But it's just people don't understand the whole process. I don't know, you know, Medicare for all, it sounds good. But I personally, I don't think it'll work, because it'll be too costly. They need to fix Obamacare. They just need to get those 33 other states to do the Medicaid expansion. You know, Kentucky was smart. Kentucky made their own Medicaid expansion and named it their own thing. You know, they took the Obamacare, changed the name to Kentucky Cade or something or other, but they actually took that process of what it is that was intended, but gave it another name and said that it was their thing, and then their legislators, you know, their Senate and their Congress, the state on the state level, developed Obamacare, but under their own name, and did Medicaid expansion, and it works great up there, because that's, you know, and that's why McConnell has taken credit for that, okay, and that's why he keeps getting voted back in, okay, because Kentucky is a very poor place. I mean, for the horse people, you know what I mean? It's bluegrass, you know, derby place, but if you don't have horses, you don't have money there, okay?
Now, another issue, which I think is interesting, because I think it's interesting, too, that you're there in Florida. And we know that Florida is one of those states. How many elections have we had that where Florida came in? So, you know, so if you could get, all right, climate change. Okay, we were just talking about how hot it's been. Okay, and you have, so if you know, in Florida, I know we have a big influx of elders because of health insurance, you know, and being able to get that medical care. But are, in your travels, and now you're down there, are people talking about climate change? You know, we've always had a lot of climate change deniers. And unfortunately, that, you know, it's a generational thing sometimes. But,
right.
I mean, I was in Georgia. You're down there. You're talking about it was 90 today. It's end of October. Are people talking, hearing that aspect of it? Are they looking for, is that one of the issues they're thinking about for 2020?
Well, the only and where I am in Central Florida, what's the topic of discussion when it's hot like it is, you know, is that a lot of them are just coming back from the north. Okay, so when you get back, those people, like I just, the guy from that goes back to Alaska, so he has restaurants up there, and he goes up there for the summer because that's when the business is good, you know, up there. And he just got back this week, and I saw him last night, and I saw him this morning, and he says, too hot. It's just too hot. I said, well, you came back too soon, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, it's too hot. It's too hot because it's cooler up there in Alaska, you know? But this is, they come back to Central Florida for precisely for the weather because it cools down in October, supposedly. But so far, it has not done that. It's still hot, you know. So, and it's still, this whole next week is going to be hot. And I don't know what they have for next, you know, for next week. But they are, I already saw the weather, you know, prediction for this week. It's all going to be close to the, you know, 90 all week long. And
did you feel that anything had been different in Alaska? Did he comment on anything changing in Alaska?
Huge cruise. His business is based on the cruise industry. Okay, because he's I'm trying to remember. He's in Fairbanks, I think it is, but he has this pizzeria, and you know the guy is part of the 1% because he's made a lot of money up there, and he said it was extraordinarily busy, you know, extraordinarily busy. He was telling me he sold 4,000 pounds of salmon, 4,000 pounds of halibut, 2,000 pounds of salmon in just a few months, okay? And 100 pizzas a day.
Wow.
Okay? And the pizzas up there are not $7.99 or $10.99. His cheapest pizza is $25 and it goes up to $40. Because that's what the price is for pizza up there. I told him, I guess I won't be eating pizza if I go to Alaska. But he said it was very, very busy. Lots of cruises, lots of people. I guess because the economy, you know, the poultry is good, and people have been, you know, even people who are not in the 1%, you know, the regular Joe out there. And that's what you find down here a lot, is that even the regular people are invested in the stock market. And they like the fact that the economy is good in that aspect, and they've made money in the last year. You know, so, yeah, a lot of the people I've met here, you know, one lady, her husband, that's all he does. He's home all day long on the computer doing trading all day long. And he's made a good gobs of money this past year, so they're very happy with the administration.
Wow.
Right. Wow. So they give up the effects of anything else because they're making the money, you know? And that to me is, you know, that to me is wrong because it's just like everything else is going to hell. But because they're making money, it doesn't matter to them, you know. So but it's just a very interesting to me, it's very interesting when you find all this diverse opinions. I mean, I have black individuals that are Trumpsters. They and I mean, it's, and you mention HRC, in other words, Hillary, and they go crazy. I can't stand her. And I calmly ask them, and why is it that you can't stand her? They don't know. I just don't like looking at her. I don't like hearing her. I just don't like, I said, you don't like what? What is it? I need to understand. I don't understand. And I express myself about it because then I ask people, what is it that makes you hate Hillary so much? But nobody knows why. Nobody knows why. It's because they heard some soundbite on Fox News or read something in some paper or some blog or something, and they stick to that. And then they just repeat that she can't be trusted. She can't be trusted. I said, trusted when? She can't be trusted. Benghazi, she testified for 11 hours. They're still investigating her, but now they're finding out that she did nothing wrong. But they're still talking bad, you know, and they still say, I can't stand her.
Well, how do they feel about, I mean, right now, you know, there's a front runner, Elizabeth
Warren.
How do they feel about her?
Nobody feels anything about any of the Democrats down here right now. They don't, you know, even the ones that are Democrat and say that will vote Democrat, but they just don't know who yet, you know? And I'm always saying to them, vote blue no matter who. That's what I say to them. And they look at me, I said, vote blue. If you don't know who you want to vote to, vote blue no matter who. As long as you're saying you're going to be a Democrat and you want a Democrat to vote, that's what we have to do. You got to vote blue no matter who. Because it might not be the person that you like that's going to be selected, you know. But if and now with this thing with what's her name, Gabby, Gabard, the Hawaiian, the Hawaiian lady, and the soldier, she's a soldier, you know. And to me, that's and then Hillary has been, you know, spoken on that one, and they're making big things on the radio, you know, on the news. It's just a huge thing how she has put herself into the presidential election. They never get tired of Hillary. I swear they never get tired of Hillary. They make headlines no matter what.
Is the line, you know, in talking to people, does the line really seem to be like who's making money and who isn't? Like, because you were saying, like the ones who are playing the market and they're making money, they're just fine with that.
Yeah.
Is that really just the bottom line for them? Like, okay, well, they're making money and they don't care about any of the other issues that they see?
Yeah. That's the bottom line for them. That's it. I've had them, you know, say to me, as long as I'm making money, I say, and I say to them, nothing else matters. The children at the border don't matter, crying in cages. You know, nothing matters. Nothing matters. You know, the rights that are being taken away from women, from the LGBT, because they all know I'm gay down here. So, you know, it's just like, I tell them, you know, people like myself, and I tell them, I'm in danger because I represent all the groups he don't like, you know? And if we allow him to put us in internment camps, I'm going to be one of the first to go because I'm Hispanic, I'm a woman, I'm a lesbian, and I'm a senior, you know? So it's like all of those. He wants to get rid of all of them, you know? But it's just, because that's not, even though he's a senior, but he doesn't see himself as that, you know? He doesn't see himself as anything but him. And he's the most important thing, you know? Nothing matters but him, you know? So it's just, and his family, I guess. I don't know. But it's just total chaos. I mean, and it surprises me that some of the Republicans just now are starting to say something, you know? And still they're not saying enough, because I mean, how much do they have to see to say that he needs to be removed? Because he's a danger to this country. As simple as that, he's a danger. You know, how do you turn your back? I mean, this is political, and the Republicans don't understand the fact that how you turn your backs on the Kurds who have fought alongside our soldiers and have died. And have died, you know, for the purpose of what we wanted to do, and getting rid of ISIS. You know, they wanted to get rid of ISIS also, but that was our purpose for being there to start out with, you know. And they decided to help a long time ago when we were fighting ISIS, you know. I mean, how do you turn your back on and not you know, say, well, how patriotic is this guy? They don't even question it. You know, so
that's the thing. And, you know, I mean, I've had people who would say, who often like, well, maybe that the older Americans would think about their kids. I mean, you know, like if you listen to things and you think about, you know, you hear the Me Too movement and they think about their daughters or their granddaughters. I mean, and also, I mean, you think about Florida. There was the Parkland shooting. The Stonehouse Douglas High School shooting was right there in Parkland, Florida.
Mm-hmm. Pulse is like 15 miles from me, mm-hmm. where I am, okay?
Mm-hmm.
None of those shootings do they ever discuss. None of it.
Wow.
None of it. It's just they're in the rural niche, you know. There's one, like I said, there's a lady that comes here. She is African American, and she is in. She's, I guess, in her early 40s, I guess, and she's a Trumpster. And you know, there's nothing that I could say. And she calls herself religious. She's a Christian. Mm-hmm. She's a Christian, mm-hmm. and she says, mm-hmm. you know, the man, he's a Christian. I say, God Almighty, how do you justify saying something like that? He's a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
How do you justify?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, how do you justify that baby crying in a cage? How do you justify a baby being taken away from his mother's arms? How do you justify the killings that he doesn't even acknowledge in those shootings that he has all kinds of crap to say about it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And nothing
mm-hmm.
that's really, you know, coming from a leader of a nation. Okay. So how do you justify these things? You know,
mm-hmm.
they just look at me, you know, because they don't. And the reason they can't justify is because they really don't know the history of stuff. They don't really read. They just listen to this Fox News, or they have a podcast that they listen to, or, you know, I had a Russian lady. I mean, she's a good person. She really is. She's a good mother. She has two boys, you know, but she's Russian, and she'll stand there and she says, Trump is the best president you've ever had, had, because she's, you know, she's a citizen, I think. She's been here for 14 mm-hmm. years, and she did her citizenship thing. Her husband was, he was on the Cirque du Soleil people,
mm-hmm.
and he got mm-hmm. one of those special talent visas thingamajiggies years mm-hmm. ago. When he first started mm-hmm. coming to the States, and then she was able, because she was the wife, she was able, and then her boys were born here, you know, so
mm-hmm.
they're citizens, and that angers me when she says that so loud, you know,
mm-hmm.
because
you
can't convince it.
Because we also know that in Florida, you have a big immigrant community, you have these activist youth, like, who came out of that shooting. Do you ever get a chance to see, I mean, what is their voice in all of this?
They're still out there, and they're still active, and they're still going out and doing that voter registration stuff, and, you know, mm-hmm. but they are, you know, they are students, so they have to go to school, you know, mm-hmm. so every now and then they are in the papers and stuff, but nobody talks about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says, oh, let's go to the protest, or let's go to, they look at me, I say, mm-hmm. I was an activist in that matter, and this is, I need to get back to being able to walk so I can get out yet and be active.
Mm-hmm.
I did find the LGBT center, which just opened up in August in Kissimmee, so I mm-hmm. have to go, and I found them because one of my doctors is like around the corner from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
mm-hmm.
they have this whole section in Kissimmee that they're renovating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really, you know, really nice. I mean, it's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
I just think, because it's right by a lake, and they have a beautiful waterfront park that even has a ramp for the boats and all that kind of stuff. And it's a public park, you know, with the walking trails and all this other kind of stuff, you know. But the LGBT center just opened there in August. So I'm going to go down then Wednesday and Thursday. I have two appointments with two doctors down in that area. So one of those 2 days I'm going to drop in on the LGBT mm-hmm. center and get more information.
You know, I want to talk about that more in a minute. But before we take a break, you know, we talked right before that big election. You had Andrew Gillum. You know, there's a lot of hope, and there was a lot of enthusiasm. Many
mm-hmm.
people, and, you know, I mean, many of us do believe that election was stolen. But what happened to that moment politically where, you know, he was making some really inroads in there? Do you think that can be duplicated in 2020, that enthusiasm?
Well, I don't know. DeSantis is, I don't know. DeSantis has been doing a few things here and there, sort of kind of, you know, giving raises to the teachers and, you know, stuff like that, and trying to make himself valid, you know. But it's also, you know, still under investigation because the election here is questionable also, you know, for the governor, just like it was up in Georgia. Okay, and the last I heard, it was an article the other day that Warren was considering Gillum as her VP.
I heard that too.
Yeah, that's what I read, you know, down here, and I read an article and stuff. So I don't know, but the thing is that the seniors down here, I mean, you have to really get into the groups where the young people are. And I mean, the Orlando Pride was just last week, and that was a huge turnout there. I couldn't go because I can't walk for any amount of distance. So. So I can't go to these things that I have to be on my feet because, the two guys, they used to live in Atlanta. They live in Sanford now, and Michael Foster and Brian something, Peterson or something like that. But I had interviewed them at the radio station, years ago. And, now they head up the Sanford Pride, you know, they head up the franchise. I had communicated with them last week because they came. They had a booth at the Orlando, and I was hoping to somehow make it there. But then I had to figure out how to, you know, where to park the car and how far they have to walk, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I wound up not going because it just I wind up not being able to do a whole lot of stuff because the inability to walk distance, you know, which is killing me. But I try to stay positive, and I try to do as much as I can. I do my resistance exercises with my bands for my upper body so I can keep my strength on my upper body. But when I try to do my little exercises, I do physical therapy and stuff like that, you know, but it's just old age, and I hate it. But I'm not going to give up, you know.
Well, don't you dare. Well, let's take our first break here, and then I want to talk a little bit more about the LGBTQ community. So we'll be right back.
This episode of Collections by Michelle Brown is brought to you in partnership with the Center for Peace Counseling and Holistic Healing Services, bringing balance to your mind, body, and spirit. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit the center at www.thecenterforpeacellc.com.
Back here on Collections by Michelle Brown, and I'm reconnecting with my dear friend Betty down there in Florida. Betty, okay, we've got a gay man running for president.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he's been on every debate. Okay. Yes. You and I met through HRC.
Yes.
HRC president is Alfonso David. He's African American. In the state of Alabama, they just hired Camarion Anderson, who's not only African American but transgender, to she's heading up their efforts in the Alabama of all places, particularly
all places,
you know, right?
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
I mean, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, you know, we've had a number of LGBT candidates across the country get elected, and since 2016, what do you think about this change, particularly at HRC with Alfonso David? Oh, and we had an LGBTQ town hall, I mean, so which HRC was involved with. What do you think about that? What does this change mean, having this African-American? He's also from has an immigrant background.
Okay, well, it's progress. That's one thing. But, I mean, how much, you know, what I worry about HRC is, you know, I mean, I met a lot of good people, you know, like yourself and others. And the experience was great. It taught me a lot about politics and how it all works, to the understanding of that,
inner thing, you know, mm-hmm. and how it affects, you know, the people with money and people without money, and because everything, you know, everything, you know, is around that kind of stuff, you know. So, but I just hope that I haven't read too much about that Alabama stuff, but that's interesting, and I'll have to look it up and really get to know that, because if I do try to do some activation, because I'm hoping to be able to get back up to Georgia for the elections mm-hmm. and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. I just hope that they maintain their involvement and support, mainly, you know, to support mm-hmm. the activities and provide the resources that are needed to move it forward, because mm-hmm. that always seems to be the place where things work or don't work, because resources mm-hmm. are not available to the to that grassroots community, or, you know, the non 1%.
Oh, you know, another thing that I remember is, like, at their national dinner, how they said that they plan to work with Stacey Abrams' organization as far as getting out the vote, getting people registered and doing that, too. I was like, wow, you know.
Well, I hope so, because, I mean, she has an organization in Atlanta, Fair Play, that's mm-hmm. their main scope. You know, the main scope is the voter registration and getting the vote mm-hmm. out. What, you know, what I say is, because, you know, Stacey may have been able to accrue some money, you know, through her donations and through her campaign, and can have used that money for other campaigns or whatever, I guess, you know, politically wise. But mm-hmm. it's still, she probably still has limits as to where she can spend that money that she had, you know, she still had in the bank, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that if they're saying that they're going to work with her, I'm hoping that they will provide the resources that are needed to do the job, you know, mm-hmm. like it's supposed to be done, you know, and reach out to all 159 counties in Georgia and get in touch, you know, and reach out to every eligible voter, and then provide the resources to get those people to the polls, in case, you know, because the Republicans are still in charge and they're still closing mm-hmm. down voting places, you know. They're still trying to prevent people from voting if they're not Republican, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, the main thing is being able to get the folks to the polls, you know, getting them registered first, you know. And then getting those people to the polls, because a lot of them don't have cars, you know, because they a lot of poor districts, and they would have to, you know, get a car or pay or whatever it is to get to the poll. And if they provide transportation, that would be great, you know, like a federal grant just for the purpose of, you know,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
if the state government decides that they're going to close down certain polls, or they're going to require certain IDs or whatever it is that they do, then provide the resources for the people, you know, to get what they need and to get to the places that they need. And if they provide a grant for the purpose of transportation, then the people have a way of getting to the polls, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they, you know, words are great, you know, mm-hmm. you know, but it's the action, you know. I'm 71 years old, you know, so it's like, don't tell me something that you're not going to do or help me with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. and I've heard that you know, many times during my activist years and stuff. Oh yeah, gung ho. Oh yeah, we're gonna do that. Oh yeah, we'll help you. Yeah, and then at the end of it, they don't provide resources, which is the main thing that you need when you're trying to get something off the ground. You know, so mm-hmm.
When mm-hmm. when I saw that they hired Alfonso David, you know, I thought of a couple of things. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought that Chad Griffin was like a transition. I mean, you sort of saw he was sort of more like, you know, just a little more down to earth than they had been. But then, mm-hmm. you know, my next thought was, well, who's still on the board of directors, which really
right.
makes the decision. And then the board mm-hmm. of governors, which is to a lesser extent than the board of directors, because if there hasn't been a shift in that thinking,
right,
then,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just a pretty face.
Right.
But then
I haven't checked
the NAACP conference, and I was talking to someone who's involved with them, who's also African-American, and he was like, you know, that there was the need for us, particularly people of color, to not mm-hmm. only support this new guy, but also to hold him and the organization accountable to really be about making the change that they seem to want to indicate that they're making
right.
by putting a black right. man in there.
Yeah, but that doesn't, the changes don't happen because you put a black man in a position. The
mm-hmm.
changes happen when you provide that person with the resources to make the changes that are needed. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, just saying something doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that it's going to happen. You know, you have to
mm-hmm.
make sure that you provide. You know, and HRC, well, you know, it's, they say a lot and, you know, they promise a lot. And then at the end of the day, it's like it's minimal, you know.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
the experience in the past. So if that's changed,
mm-hmm.
great. But if it's the same board of directors and that hasn't changed, because I haven't kept track, I haven't been on their website in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And but if that hasn't changed, then the
mm-hmm.
it's just like Congress. I mean, you have representatives and senators and reps who have been in there 30, 40, and 50 years. Things don't change if the mindset doesn't change. Okay, if
mm-hmm.
the mind is not more progressive. I mean, you know, the old people think old. I mean, as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, we get older because we get progressive more so, but because we've always been in touch with the younger folks,
mm-hmm.
and they pass, you know, they pass things down to us. Or we have grandchildren or younger people in the family who are very outspoken and they talk about stuff, and you learn from them. You know, so
mm-hmm.
we become more, you know, in the mindset of the younger and know that change is needed, even though we're
mm-hmm.
still, I'm talking about me at 71 years old. I'm old school. Yes, old school, but I stay in touch. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I stay in touch with the younger folks. I talk with the younger folks. I get to know, you know, what they're thinking. I mean, I even talk to the Russian ladies. He just turned 15. To the little 15-year-old boy, his name is
mm-hmm.
Matt, and I talk to him all the time. You know, and he's very progressive thinking, and he understands when I'm talking to him about politics, and he'll tell me what his other classmates are thinking about and saying and stuff. So he doesn't listen too much to his mom because he's, you know, he respects his mom and all that kind of stuff, but her political thinking and where she's at, because she's from, you know, old school to him, all right, and she's
mm-hmm.
only 36, I think. I think she's only 36 or something like that. But, you know, but she's still, you know, I talk to her because I want to know what she's thinking. I want to know where
mm-hmm.
she's getting the information from. And there's these podcasts that she's from these, I don't know, Owen, somebody Owen. She listens to the podcast of some lady named Owen, and I have no idea who she is, but it's a very conservative, radical Republican kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, because she's a good person, like I said earlier, and she's a great mom. You know, her boys are so polite and so nice, and, you know, they're just nice kids, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So she can't be all that bad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's her politics, and she's having problem with the – she doesn't equate Trump to Putin, okay? She doesn't, you know, she said she hates Putin, but she loves Trump. I said, how do you justify that? Please tell me how you justify that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we have back and forth all the time about it, you know, but each time I learn something, you know, or she'll learn
mm-hmm.
something. But she's having problems with the cultural,
mm-hmm.
the concepts that we use.
Mm-hmm.
They don't register with her, you know, so she has to ask, well, what do you mean by that? Or what do you mean
mm-hmm.
by this? You know, so in order to get it, you know, sort of kind of registered in her head so she can understand what it is we mean when we say something, you know, because it
now,
might be
know,
a slight.
Mm-hmm. You're there on the ground. You're talking to this young fellow.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about how they're opening this new center in Kissimmee. In Cleveland, they're opening a new LGBT center. In different states.
What, Cleveland, Ohio?
Yeah, in Cleveland, they just opened a new LGBT center. Here in Michigan, you know, it's like at a state level, there's ways that we're able to communicate with others. We have an openly gay, a lesbian attorney
uh-huh.
general at the state level. And at different cities that you see that either from the community center or people who are out like you, who are talking to people, that we mm-hmm. are moving things to change hearts and minds. Now, I don't think that there's, I think that there's still a need, as long as we have a political system that we do, for these national organizations. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's those of us who are on the ground talking to people in their communities and helping, like you said, break down the cultural differences and talking
because nobody,
and making an opinion, that we're making the difference.
Right. It's always been like that, Michelle. It's always been the people who have been on the ground who make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that the big, you know, the big boys like HRC, they take the credit is because we allow them to, because we mm-hmm. join them, we become members, and we advocate mm-hmm. for them instead of them advocating for us. Okay?
So if Alfonso David called you and said, Betty, you know, I want to do a better job, what would you mm-hmm. tell him?
Get out and talk to the people. Get out and find out what it is that they want. Find out, you know, how they feel about, get them to know you as an LGBT person, okay? Because here, when I've had in the dog park, I meet lots mm-hmm. of folks in the dog park from all kinds of, you know, walks of life, okay? From rich to poor to in between to black, Russian, you know, Hispanic, Mexican, Venezuela. I mean, from everywhere, okay? Canadian, mm-hmm. Australian, I mean, everywhere. And nobody has a problem with my gayness. Nobody. Mm-hmm. They all know I'm a lesbian. Nobody has a problem with that. You know, they see me, I have my little dogs, I take care of my dogs, they're my babies, and just like their dogs are their babies, you know, so we have something mm-hmm. in common, okay? We have something in common. So because we have something in common, it makes me an okay person, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what those people out there need to, you know about us, that we are just mm-hmm. like them. We're just regular folks, you know, we're not no mm-hmm. different. You know, mm-hmm. and our personal life have no place in their mouth or in their speech mm-hmm. or whatever. You know, I mean, we don't ask about their marriages or their, you know, relationship. And we don't want to know what goes on in their bedroom. Well, the same thing applies to us. You know, that's not, you know, part of the conversation. That's not anything that's supposed to determine who I am. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't use it to determine them, you know.
Do you think it was important to have that LGBT town hall debate to talk about? I mean, because many people don't.
Oh yeah, with the presidential candidate. Yeah, with
uh-huh.
the presidential candidate. Oh yeah, yeah. I think so, because whoever watched it, all of a sudden, you know, sort of kind of got a feel for, okay, this is another informational kind of piece for conversation. You know, this is something else. Okay, they might have learned something by some, you know, somebody, you know, saying something. But you see, everybody, everywhere, has somebody who's gay in their family. Okay,
mm-hmm.
listen, there's a lady that comes here that I met, who babysits my dogs. Her son is gay. Okay,
mm-hmm.
there's another lady at the other dog park. She has twin boys. One boy is gay. Another lady at the dog park. She has a brother. He's gay. Okay, I mean, and there's a husband and wife that come here, and the dog Murray. The dog is Murray. I can't remember their names. I always remember the dog's names. They have a daughter who's gay and getting married, and he
mm-hmm.
just told me the other day, my daughter's getting married. She was so excited. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so I mean, they all are aware of gayness, but it's part of their family. It's normal to them. So when they meet somebody else, it's, oh yeah, my daughter's gay. Oh, yeah, my brother's gay. Oh, yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
I have two boys and one of them is gay. That's been
mm-hmm.
the conversations, you know. Nobody has, you know, said, and even the Russian lady said, oh, never, never, oh, no, never, never. But remember, we have to be tolerant. I said, yeah, okay, good, cool. Be tolerant, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a nice thing also to put it at that level because, I mean, really, stay out mm-hmm. of my bedroom. Okay, but people mm-hmm. need it. I mean, but the people who don't recognize that, you know, in almost, you know, more states than we'd like to recognize, how we can still be fired about housing discrimination.
Right.
I mean, the things that, you know, marriage wasn't like the final line. And
no.
Marriage, how,
no.
How many other things that they are, you know. So I thought it was important to put it at that level. And also that it's like, it made it really clear to me, like, you know, if I were not gay, I thought, these people aren't asking for special rights. I didn't know that they didn't have this and that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We just, you know, people just, you know, we just like everybody else, you know? It's mm-hmm. just like they judge us. What happens is those people who are judging us on how they view us in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's none of their business.
Hey, and it's probably tamer than what they're doing.
Right. Well, look, every other day there's another Republican coming out for being a pedophile or having sex somewhere with an underage whatever. I mean, every other day there's another one coming out in some state, you know, House representative or some priest, some pastor, some something coming every other day. At least down here in Florida, those things come out often.
I know, it doesn't just sort of tickle you, like you said, there it is, up, here's another.
Yeah, but look, listen, the Villages, okay, which here in Central Florida, which is up about maybe 20-something miles north of where I am now, the Villages is huge, and it's all senior citizens, which are, you know, 55-plus communities, okay? And it's a variety of different communities and stuff there. You can, you know, all kinds. It's just huge. It's huge with all kinds of shopping malls and the fancy stores. And I mean, it's the capital of the STD disease in the nation, not just in Florida. These are all senior citizens screwing one another, okay, and getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a known fact. And that's a known fact. Like, I mean, that, you know, I read it in the paper when I first got down here and I went to my friends that I had met. And I said, what is this Village thing here? What are the Villages, senior citizens, STD? What is that all about?
but the dollars to talk about STDs and things that protect against, like, PrEP and HIV and AIDS, you know, that's not there. But like you said, here's a different population.
Right.
People don't want to think of it. You know, as long as they can.
No, and the population
HIV
is
and AIDS and that
right.
on us. You know, it's okay. But you know,
But the population, the population in the Villages is mainly, you know, well-to-do, upper class, white, okay, and behave and whatever behavior they do is okay. Okay, because you got some of the fanciest stores. You name them, Fifth Avenue stores. I mean, they and it's. A golf cart city. They have the whole main street up there in the Villages. I went up there with them and I said, holy crap, look at this. It was nothing but golf carts, and they got the little, just like if you was going into the little town and the parking spaces for cars, but they were just for golf carts, okay? And everything goes around in a circle, so you don't have to go the other way. Everything goes around in a circle, but you don't miss anything because they've navigated so that you can see everything, go through everything, and then get back to the main strip to get back onto 27, okay, because 27 goes right through it. But it just – I just laughed. I said, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. You know,
it sort of takes you back to healthcare. These are people who probably have, and they can get treatment. But if you go up into Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, New York, Detroit, where you have LGBTQ youth who don't have access to that and don't have access to health care, I mean, you know, I mean, so it makes a difference. You can report the numbers, but can you get the treatment?
Oh, yeah.
They
have all kinds of healthcare professionals in the Villages, okay? that provide for you.
Too, I mean, you know, and that's what I tell people, you know, it's sort of like it's all connected because, when you see that there's this attack on Planned Parenthood, which often provides low-cost healthcare
for
people for
low income
who will be going there, up there, so you're attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all really connected.
Everything
that,
is connected.
If you have money, you can get reported and they can count it, but you can get health care. But people who don't,
then you can die. Then you can just die, okay? It's just simple as that. That's the reality of it. Then you can just die, you know, because
you
it's
can just
that's,
you
the, way,
can
that's
just
the way
die.
The system. Yeah, that's the way the system is built, and that's why people need to be, you know, informed. You know, the only way that we can change things, yeah, we have our representatives, you know, but once they get up there in the Washington, D.C., they get into that whole flow of, oh, wow, I can do this. Oh, boy, I can make that much money. Oh, boy, they're going to pay me for this. Mm-hmm. You know, to get into that thing of getting all these favors and being able to go to all these fancy places without having to pay. And then all they want from you is your vote when the time comes for something that they need, you know, for your corporation, for their company, for their boss, whatever it is, you know, and people get into that thing and they feel that they can get away with it because their constituency is not informed. They just don't, are not aware of how the wheels turn. You know, and this is why we need to, you know, keep at it. You know, we need to keep informing, you know, because I'm telling you, when I get into my thing sitting at that at that table in the dog park, people just look at me and they just like, they have no idea what I'm talking about. They just don't have any idea because they never thought about going there. They never go, you know, about thinking in that way. Okay. As long as they're in a happy place and they're doing what they think is good, they don't care about anything else. They don't care about anything else.
Yeah, I can go and get, you know, painkillers for my hip, my knee, but hey, what do I care about Planned Parenthood? I can't get pregnant, you know? I mean, that's
right,
you,
exactly.
You hear those conversations.
Exactly.
I don't care
exactly
about Planned Parenthood.
The senior citizens, what do they care about Planned Parenthood? They're not caring about planning for any being any parent anymore. They've already had theirs. All they're thinking about is how much sex can I have before I die?
I can still do that. You know, they often say,
and Viagra. Yeah, Viagra is paid for by Medicare in full. Mm. Yes, all you need is the script. Go to the drugstore and you get your Viagra for free. Your Medicare pays for it, but you can't get birth control.
Wow.
That's a concept. Think about that one, okay?
Wow.
I couldn't believe it when I saw, because down here was the first time that I saw an ad that said Viagra's covered by Medicare. I said, what?
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, who knew? I mean, I didn't know that, but I just, but you know what? I mean, you know, and you travel around, okay? Isn't it like a totally different world? I mean, do you sometimes have to want to go and shake your neighbors or the people at the dog and say,
listen, you know how,
like,
you know how many times
of America?
You know how many times I've been tempted to get some banners, put them on my RV, and just start driving around, you know, about, yeah, this is the I Am tour, you know, and no, he needs to be impeached, you know, and it's like just putting little, like making signs and just sticking up and just driving so people can read the stuff so that maybe they'll get inquisitive and maybe they'll get curious and maybe they'll want to know why, you know. But you know how many times? But then I think about all the damn pain I'm going to be in when I can't walk and stuff. So I have to keep still. I'm dying. I mean, I'm dying. Not dying, literally dying, but I'm just dying from the fact that I can't get out there and be a participant like I used to, you know? And I've been thinking about doing a podcast. I've been doing, you know, just thinking. But being in pain when it's – today is a good day. And but when I'm in pain, it's constant. I don't take painkillers for it or anything because I won't. You know, doctors want to put me on opioids. And I said, no. I take an Aleve. I take two Aleves every other day or something because it works, you know, and it stays, you know, I stay pain-free for a day or two or whatever. But not, at least tolerable, you know, at least I can stand it. But when it gets very bad, I mean, I have to keep still. And I have two dogs I have to walk. You know, that's why I come to the park so often, because I can just take them into the park, let them loose, and I can sit down, you know, because they have
So you are committed to not taking this, but we do have, I mean, another thing that has come up in these debates is this opioid epidemic to where, and you do have doctors who are quick to write you a script.
Oh, yeah. I could get them anytime. All I got to do is go to any of the doctors I'm seeing. I'm in pain, and they've tried to put me on – they put me on Lyrica. I had to give that shit up because – oh, sorry. I have to erase that one. I had to give it up because it was making me feel terrible. I found out that was like an opioid. They put me on the Tramadol thing. I took one night. I thought I was going to jump out of my skin. I gave them away to a lady that takes them over here in the park. I gave them away. I said, you take them anyway? Yeah, here, take them. I mean, you know, it's like any of the doctors that I go to, that's what they recommend. They go through the whole, they put me on another one, and I can't think of that. That didn't work for me either. I mean, they're all habit forming, what they want me to take. And I refuse. I go in and I tell them I'm doing everything natural. I'm doing organic. I'm doing plant-based on everything that I do in order to get rid of all of this stuff and this all this pain and the diabetes, because I'm also dealing with the diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I just had a Bio-T done, which is the hormone thing. And I was down on vitamin D, and I was down on my testosterone was only 5. And we're supposed to be 150 to 250 for women. And mm-hmm. that might be causing some, so they gave me a pellet. That mm-hmm. part, Medicare didn't cover that. And it cost me $400. And wow. it's a pellet of testosterone at 137.5% of whatever it is, testosterone. Mm-hmm. And they make a little slit on your backside, and they stick mm-hmm. it in there, and then they banded it up. And you know, I just took the Band-Aid off today because I just did it Monday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, last Monday, and I was afraid to take the bandage off. So, because I didn't know if it had completely healed up, and I didn't want to take it off and then open up that little slit, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but it's okay.
Now, mm-hmm. you know, you stay pretty aware. You read, you talk to people mm-hmm. of different generations, but, mm-hmm. you know, you're down here and you're surrounded by, you know, there are young people, but you're surrounded by a lot of seniors. I mean, we've talked about a number of things, Medicare, you know, and how many of them aren't really concerned about it. Income, how many of them, as long as they still get money in, they're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, opioids, I mean, well, hey, you can get them right and left, but other places are just like dying because of opioid addiction. You right. hear in conversations, you know, where that there's, like millennials or younger people sort of look at and they go like, you know, they just don't get it. In fact, they're looking at some of the candidates who are up there and going like, you know, we're all, you know, over 70. They don't understand what we're going through. And as I listen to you talk, I mean, you know, it seems like many of the people, more people don't get it than there are people like you. They aren't functioning intergenerationally. They're sort of right. like in their own bubble.
Yeah, you're right.
How do we bridge that gap to sort of like yeah,
more of us have to get out there, more of us who are aware. We have to form some kind of something where we can interconnect and somehow do things that we can sort of kind of, you know, get, you know, like for instance, I know WRFG, for instance. You probably know somebody up there in Detroit in the radio thing, you know, or, you know, somehow connect with, you know, there's people that I know that, you know, people in Atlanta, it was televised. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and then Tony, I know Tony, you know, and he was on television mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's something that I've always tried to do when I was active in Atlanta. If I met one person who was trying to do something, and then I met another person who was talking about doing that plus adding something else, why reinvent anything? You know, when somebody else is doing something, I would say, okay, well, this person is doing this. Why don't you give them a call and find out how you can interconnect and get the work done without having to mm-hmm. repeat what they've already done? You know, so mm-hmm. my notion has always been, If we all got together with all the experiences and knowledge and the things that we have seen and, you know, and know from our own personal experience and plus friends and whatnot, and if we can get all that information out there mm-hmm. to the public and do it in sound bites by districts, or because, you know, there's 159 districts in Georgia, for instance. So getting in touch with the leader of the whatever organization is in that one district for LGBT folks, for instance, getting in touch with them and giving them access to all these other organizations that are doing work and how they're doing, so they can have, we have telecommunications now. It's not like you have mm-hmm. to travel to go. You can get on Skype. You can do, I'm sure they, that Skype is probably old fashioned. You know, mm-hmm. there's probably other ways of communicating and being, you know, in the same place at the same time, more or less. You know, like, in other words, you can talk and everybody can talk at the same time so that they can have meetings and they can share information and knowledge and resources. You know, I always remember something that somebody had told me, and I won't say names or anything, but there was an organization that I used to belong to in Atlanta. And in the beginning, I knew that they were able to, you know, fundraise and bring in lots of money for that particular organization, okay? And every year, it got better and better and better. And one day I asked, I said, why don't you share your resources with those organizations that are trying to do these other things, you know, from the ground up, but don't have the money for everything that they need to do? So if they had some resource that they could say, okay, here's our plan, here's what we want to do, and they could get funded from somewhere and or have a fundraiser, you know, so they can bring in some money to get things done. And the response was, no, we don't share our resources, because if we share them, then there's less for us. I said, oh, shit. You know, I said, I just never understood that concept, you know, because the way I look at it, if you help somebody else to do what they need to do and they expand and they get bigger, then they're always going to come back to help who helped them. That's the way I look at it. You know what I mean? So they're not losing, they're gaining, because they'll gain all those resources that that other person manages to get in, you know? So, I mean, you know, it's just mind-boggling sometimes, and sometimes I just think that people just don't have the, I don't know, looking to the future, or, you know, the foresight, or, you know, it's just, they have to be, like, true believers, you know, in what can get done. You know what I mean? Because you have you have to have a little bit of dreamer in you, you know, and a little bit of doer, okay? Because you have to dream about what can be, and then you can do to make that happen. You know, so so that's the way I've always felt about stuff. You know, and it's just. And you have to be able to just get out there and have the conversations and not be afraid. I mean, fear, I think, is one of the biggest things that sort of kind of keeps people, you know, from activating. In other words, being able to join organizations or whatever, because I think the lashback, you know, is the pushback or whatever they want to call it, is what they fear. They don't want to be looked at in a negative, you know, and, but you have to believe. If you believe in what you believe, and the belief is good, then it doesn't matter if somebody else thinks, you know, in the bad, or doesn't want to accept what you believe in, as long as you know that it's good, you know, and it's for the betterment of whatever it is the cause is, you know. So it's just complicated, you know. It's just it's all complicated, you know. So you know what you're
saying. We're going to take our next break, and we're going to talk about something that's been really complicated, these debates. So we'll be right back.
Collections by Michelle Brown airs every Thursday at 7 p.m. You can subscribe now and listen to the podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Be sure to like the Collections by Michelle Brown Facebook page and mark your calendar so you never miss an episode.
We're back here on Collections by Michelle Brown. Betty, we were talking about something that we left out, talking about things that were complicated and dreamers and doers. So, okay, so we've been doing these debates. I mean, we had the one in Detroit where there were so many people, they had to do it over 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a separate one that was on the environment and climate change, which was, not on one of the main channels, you know. We have these places setting thresholds on who can get up on the stage and be a part of it. And I know
you
look at all of these candidates, you know, I heard dreamers and doers. I heard solutions for that. What do you think about this whole process? I mean, and that we're months away from the first primary.
Yeah, this is February. You know, it's closer than you think. February is just around the corner, actually, you know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, you know, my thing is that for some reason somebody told these candidates that you got to beat the other one down for some reason. I mean, if you're beating one another up, you're beating the party, you know, because this is what the public is going to get the impression of, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if you have people who are undecided and all they see debate after debate after debate is people beating up on one of the other candidates or something, because that's they think that's how they're going to score points, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's wrong. I just think that's so wrong. You know, it's like they need to be able to tell us what their policies are going to be, how they're going to solve stuff, what, you know, to take the things that are going on now and say, okay, we know that this is not working now, but this is what we would do to fix it and to make it work, you know, things that, and talk to them, the stuff that they understand, stuff that affects them now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And not give them these hypotheticals of, you know, this is what will happen, but it's hypothetical. It's not, it's not based on the experience that the people are experiencing now, you know? So I don't know, you know. I have to interject with this is that my favorite from day one has been Kamala and Mayor Pete, because from day one my opinion is that I know that there was things about her that people were talking about when she was the district attorney out there in California. And about the prison system and stuff. And, you know, she sent people to jail when she shouldn't have or whatever. And, you know, but she's already acknowledged that. And she was a prosecutor. And she was working with the laws that existed at the time. You know, marijuana was still a crime back then. Okay. So she had no recourse but to sentence them, you know, to get them in jail and give them jail time for it. There was no option. So, but they're persecuting her for that, and they're criticizing her for that, and I think that's wrong. And that takes away from the people who really don't know her, because they already started out with a negative. So now they don't want to even pay attention anymore about her, okay? And I mean that, and that's for both, you know, liberals and progressives and conservatives and people who are on the fence and all that other kind of stuff, you know. But I think that she's sincere. I really think she has the experience, and she knows the law, which is something that we're missing right now. Okay. I mean, I really think that she would make a great president, and then if she would bring along Mayor Pete. He would bring in the LGBT community because he's brought in a lot of money. He's in his campaign, and we know why. He's LGBT, and all the all the HRC elite white gay men are donating. Okay, we know this. The community knows this. Okay, so yes, he's accumulated a lot of dollars, but regardless of the dollars, okay, he talks in a very understandable way. He explains things to the people. He's very knowledgeable. He's very smart. He's aware, you know, he's been a soldier. He's aware of international policy. He knows international affairs. He's been, you know, he's been to these countries. He knows the people. He speaks seven languages.
Mm-hmm.
to speak seven languages, okay, there has to be an understanding of those cultures in order to feel that language and learn it. Because when I speak in Spanish, there's a whole different feeling when I say something than when I say it in English. Okay, mm-hmm. Because the words are more expressive, the words are more colorful, you know, they're in Spanish than they are in English, okay? And mm-hmm. and they're more endearing, or they're more emotional, or they're more, you know, something that affects me and how I'm thinking of whatever it is that I'm saying, okay, opposed to the English. English is very bland, it's very, very unemotional, because that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and you have to understand that culture, because when you're translating from one to another,
exactly.
You know, it makes you think before you speak. You know?
That's right. And you have to say it in certain tones. You know, in English, we don't have tones. We only have tones when we're angry or if we're happy. You know, when we're just talking in general conversation, there's no tones in order to express what it is that you're trying to say. You know, mm-hmm. In you know, other languages, there's tones in your voice that tell the other person, you know, the intensity of what it is that you're saying, you know, so it's just different. So the man has the capacity to do all kinds of, you know, international stuff and be a great, you know, I know a VP is more like an ambassador, you know, but he would be mm-hmm. a great ambassador, you know, for the relationship between countries. And the way we are right now, if we ever needed somebody that could do that to fix what has been broken, we need mm-hmm. somebody who understands. Okay, we don't need no novice or no somebody that's just there mm-hmm. because they look pretty or whatever. You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, but you know,
Kamala Mayor Pete, that's my pick.
Well, you know, when I listen to, you know, because I'm not gonna tell you my pick, but you know, mm-hmm. we think mm-hmm. a lot of many ways. But mm-hmm. but you know, when I look at all of them and I look at the way that these debates are set up. If you go back and you look at all of these people, they have the opportunity to define what's the Democratic Party and what makes it different from the mm-hmm. Republican Party, and what this country would look like. But instead, mm-hmm. I mean, different ones have different, they have different strengths, but rather than doing that, they've got like, you know, this quick thing to try to attack the other person and maybe get in what they want to do without painting that picture, where often, like, you can sort of come out and go like, wow, what do they stand for? You know, what's going to be different about getting a Democrat in there?
Right.
And I
right.
think that, you know, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, it could be. It could be. You know, they have to acknowledge it, and they have to fix it, you know, in the next couple of debates, you know, before February. I mean, because it's just, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they can't wait until, you know, because February, and then you have all the, you know, all the other caucuses, all the other primaries or mm-hmm. whatever, and before you know, mm-hmm. there's November. And mm-hmm. and we have to know. We just have to know who it's going to be, you know. But
and, you know,
that's
and
why I've signed many petitions online about, you know, vote blue no matter who. You know, I've signed and pledged on many forms, and because it may come down to that. It may come down that we have to unite as a people, okay, whether we like them or not, to vote
and
blue,
you know,
no matter who.
And I think that that's really important. Like I said, and I think that you have can look at, and I mean, you've got a president and vice president up there in that group. You also have many other cabinet positions up there, which are mm-hmm. fix the damage that's been done and build forward. But, you know, I think that, you know, how do we get that? I still hear people fighting that, well, you know, if it'd been Bernie and not Hillary, you know, we'd be in there. They're still fighting that. And it's like, you know, that was 2016.
Let
it go.
Let it go. That's because you see, as much as nobody wants to admit it, mm-hmm. Hillary would have had such an impact on not only our country but around the world, because mm-hmm. she is so much more informed. She knows every leader in the, you know, in the world. Okay, she knew mm-hmm. exactly how to speak to them, talk to them, what they needed. Okay. How we can help them and how they can help us. You know, because she was a danger. She was a danger to a lot of them, to a lot
because
of them.
And you know what? You could erase Bill from her resume. And an awesome woman, you know. You have a really phenomenal human.
Oh, yeah. All by herself. I mean, you know, all by herself. I'm not even considering Bill, you know. I look at her, I look at Hillary Rodham, you know, that never mind the Clinton. She is a self-made individual. I mean, she started young, okay, and worked her way up the ranks. All right. Yes, she married the governor to be over there in Arkansas, but that was Arkansas. That was not that, you know, but it wound up to be the thing to have done, okay, eventually. But it's just, she's a smart woman. She's just smart. And the thing is that she had so much information, and they feared her. They feared her. They knew that a whole lot of stuff would come down tumbling, you know. And the thing is that it's all going to come down tumbling anyway, because with all this mess that has been created by Cheeto, all those same people would have been taken down because they were already corrupt to start out with. You know what I mean? And she would have, you know, she would have identified them or kicked them out silently. She would have just told them, listen, I'm giving you the chance to, you know, put in your walking papers and leave. All right. Mm-hmm. And we keep it quiet. You just went home to take a vacation, be with the family or whatever. And goodbye. Okay. Because she knew. You know, and it's just, you know, and now what every time she opens up her mouth for some, you know, it becomes, you know, something like she said that was wrong, just like what she came out and said this past, you know, weekend about the candidate, what's her name, Gabbard, the Hawaiian lady. And now they're, you know, they're trying to flip it back on her, like she can't get, you know, over her loss or anything like that. No, she's warning us. She's warning us. She warned us back then. We didn't listen. And look at us now.
This is the last shot of the patriarch, okay? Men have had, you know, they have screwed things up for so many years, and now this is their last hurrah. And I think that they're afraid, even though they know that women can do it, and they see what we're doing.
Yeah, but they're not never going to admit
it.
Yeah, but they're not never going to admit that women can do it.
No,
you know?
No. So when you look also, we've got some, you know, on the Democratic side, you know, are Americans really, you have women, particularly white women, who I want to say, do they have this daddy complex where they still want to put in, you know, if it has to be old white man, and then it's like, okay, well, we'll vote for him because he has some kind of knowledge. When you want to say, my sister, you know, you're holding down the house. Why do you feel that we need a man, a white man, empowered? Mm-hmm. You know, that one, I think women would be wiser with power. We've always been wiser.
We've always been wiser. My argument has always been, even when I was still on the radio, you know, years back, and that was like 3 years or whatever, but I've always said, you know, and always asked the question, in the household, who, in any culture, who solves the issues of the household? Who finds the solutions? Is not the guy, okay? It's not the dad, and it's not the husband, okay? It's the mom, the wife, who finds the solution and says, okay, we're going to fix this, okay? Who does that? Anywhere, everywhere. And that's exactly what the United States of America needs. We need a woman who will go in there and fix it the way that women know how to fix shit in simple English. You know, that's just, you know, it's just yeah. It, I don't, but it's trying
but
to, you know.
But don't you?
I run into that at the park here with the guys, you know, and I tell them that, you know, I have a little hat that says, you know, the future is female, and they look at me and they laugh, and I say, ha, say, what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
So, we both come under that umbrella as people of color, and I will have progressive women who will come and say, you know, if black women and if women of color, if you guys just come out and you just do this and do that, and I'm going like, you know what, we've been doing the heavy lifting. When are you going to get your tribe together? Because they're the ones who voted for that. Do you ever, you know, how do we tell progressives, yeah. you know, you can't ask us to do the heavy lifting and then also blame it on us when more of you voted for him than us.
Right.
You
right.
mean, you know.
The thing is to get people to get people to understand that they are that group of people of color. You know, that some mm-hmm. folks, that because their skin looks white, mm-hmm. they don't think that they're considered to be people of color. You know, no matter if you're not white Caucasian with a mm-hmm. European background in this country, you're not considered to be white. Anything else yeah. is considered to be a person of color.
They might talk to you like you are, but when it hits, when the rubber hits the road, they're going to say, but you know,
yeah. Uh-huh, yeah, but people, I've looked at people, because, I mean, the Russian lady, for instance, she says, well, why do people treat me so mean? You know, I look like them, I'm like them. I said, no, they don't look at you like a white person. Understand that. You're Russian.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
You're not white.
Mm-hmm.
You're not white. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm not white. They don't look at me as being, you know, I'm not white. She said, you're not? I said, no, I'm Puerto Rican. She said, well, then you're white. Said, no, I'm not white. I'm a person of color. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even though she's an immigrant, she considers to be her, you know, she thinks she's assimilated, but she has a deep, deep accent. She doesn't understand half of the words that you tell her and stuff like that. She has to ask what it means, you know, so people don't consider her to be an American mm-hmm. or white. She's an immigrant.
To me, the other thing that people don't understand is like, okay, we have always been a country of immigrants, but
right.
now when he talks about making America great again,
yeah.
he says
mm-hmm.
he's talking about making it white again.
White
so you have
again.
Many people who, like you said, like her, you know, she's skilled
yeah.
at it.
Yeah.
Well, when it counts, they'll say, oh, yeah, you look white, but they still go by that accent. And
exactly.
Not
exactly.
Rich, she's not like us. So
and won't, they won't treat her. She, they won't treat her like mm-hmm. she is part of them, you know?
You know,
yeah.
how do we reclaim? I mean, and make people stand up and proudly say, you know what? We are a nation of immigrants.
Immigrants.
You know, you don't have to strive to be white to be American.
Right.
By being an immigrant, you're part of the American experience.
Right. And that's another poster I would put on my RV if I go around. I'm an immigrant. I'm a person of color, okay? I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's like
mm-hmm.
I'm a lesbian, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a grandmother, you know what I mean? You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like to give that humanity to all the rest of it. You know, I mean, it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just people just don't put all of those things together. That's the and they always want to be better than. OK,
mm-hmm.
they always want to be better than somebody else. So when they get a mm-hmm. chance to, you know, to be above a whole group of people, that's what they choose to be.
But it's
based on ignorance. Is
mm-hmm.
misinformation, and there's so much of it down here in Florida. I mean, it's just
mm-hmm.
misinformation everywhere, you know. And I try to, when I talk to them, I said, listen, if you're listening to Fox News, you're not getting the news. I was in broadcasting, and Fox News was never a credible source of information for us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's still not. Fox News is not a credible source, period,
mm-hmm.
you know?
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so in January 2021, Betty, and you're sitting
mm-hmm.
there, you know, with your dog, the phone rings, and they said, you know, Betty, you know, the president would like to speak to you. And you say, hello, Madam President. and she says, Betty, you know, it's pretty messed up. What do you think? I mean, give me your top three things that you think I need to tackle.
Oh, the people. Just go talk to the people. Just mm-hmm. go out there and talk to the people. I don't care how much you think you have. You haven't talked enough. Just go out there. Let them know that you hear them. Let them know that you know what has to be fixed. And be transparent. You know,
mm-hmm.
talk to them. Talk to them on their level, you know. Talk to them in without political ease, you know. It's just like legalese. Just talk to them mm-hmm. in a way that talks to them in that general form of everyday life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk to them. Talk to them how your what your aspirations are. Talk to them about your children, your grandchildren, if you have them. You know, talk to them about what you aspire. Talk to them and compare to, and ask them what they aspire. You know, and see where you can come together and what issues are that you need to work on, because that's the same issues that you want to happen, they want to happen. You know, so make and then come out of it with some priorities. Like, you know, take three things that you'll say, okay, we're going to get this done right away. When those things are where you know they're possible because you have the power to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
talk to them. Just get to know the people that you are serving, okay? Because this is what it is. You're serving mm-hmm. them. You know, when you're serving someone or people or group, you need to find out what their needs are. Get to know mm-hmm. that, you'll be president forever.
mm-hmm.
No, I mean. But that's what you need to do, you know. You know, I mean, Obama talked to the people. Whenever he talked to them, he would look straight out at them in TV or whatever it was, and talk. He would talk to them, and he would talk to them in a way that you could understand, you know. And you knew
and
that it was coming
that he
from
really
his heart.
Cared.
And you, mm-hmm. Yeah, you felt his caring, and you knew it was coming from his heart. But he also told us that he had a Republican Congress that wasn't letting him do a lot of things. See, people don't mm-hmm. understand that. They think that the president has the power to do whatever he wants to do, and that's mm-hmm. not so, okay? Mm-hmm. He needs the approval. He needs the approval. And if they don't put the damn things up on the floor to talk about, discuss on them, and vote on them, then nothing ever gets done. Look, they got 400 bills sitting on the Senate desk that have mm-hmm. been approved by the House, dealing in everything from gun control to women's rights to everything. And nothing is getting done because the Senate won't act on it. Because McConnell. It's McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would like to see the candidates talking about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tell them, this is what the Democratic Party has done. We have passed all these bills that you all showed concern because you came out to march, you came out and protested, you sent in your letters, your postcards, whatever it was, and you said this is what we needed. We voted, we passed it in the House, we sent it to the Senate for approval. They haven't done squat on them. There's 400 of these bills sitting there, and we need to get those done so that you, the people, can get this, and this. Then they would understand, because they know they're not getting none of that because the bills haven't passed, you know, because the Senate hasn't acted. But they don't understand that concept because they don't even realize what the procedures are. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's what lacks the communication, the telling mm-hmm. them the facts. You know, we're not mm-hmm. stupid out here. We're not stupid. You know, we're not stupid. But if we don't have the information, we can't process it. We can't determine what it is. We can't make form opinions. We don't know what it is. The only people that know what it is folks like you and myself and others who read and pay attention and are informed. And know that nothing is happening, okay? But it's like it's not happening because there's only one party not acting, okay? And not
mm-hmm.
doing what they're not working for us. They're not serving the people.
Well, Betty, it's been mm-hmm. great. I'm going to talk to you, but you know we're going to talk because as we get closer to it. And
oh, yeah.
Whatever you do, vote blue.
Yes, vote blue no matter who.
That's right. No matter who.
You know, swallow hard, go in there, and vote blue no matter who. Even if you don't like them, because otherwise what we wind up getting another 4 years of what we don't want.
We have our work ahead of us. Go on.
I want to thank today's guest, Betty Covertier, for sharing her unique perspective as an out Latina lesbian living the retired life in Florida. Florida is the third most populous state in the country. It contains the highest percentage of people over 65. Although there is a significant Hispanic population in South Florida, approximately 65% of the population identifies as white. it's among several states that are largely targeted by both political parties in the campaign period before the presidential election. Be sure and follow Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let us know if you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future show. You can listen to this or past episodes of the show on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or Blog Talk Radio. Join us next week when I'll introduce you to another amazing individual living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality, and creating change, right here on Collections by Michelle Brown. Thank you for listening.